You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mom made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we're happy to make that you're making us part of your daily routine. Although last week we took a couple of days off heading into Summer League, we are here in scenic, lovely, and blistering hot Las Vegas, Nevada. I am John Corrales of the Rain and Jays, joined by the kid, Jay King. Jay, how you feeling? How's Vegas treating you so far?
I'm the most boring Vegas experiencer of all time. I have been asleep by like, been in bed by like 10:30.
You bailed early last night.
Every night of the trip, yeah. I haven't been electric this week. I'm not gonna lie. I may be getting old.
You, yeah. I mean, by the time I showed up, you guys are already at the craps table. That lasted for like 15 minutes, and then that was it. Gone. Done. Very limited Jay King experience.
That was it for me. The kid hits a wall and needs to go home.
That's it. All right, well, we'll see what we can do about that later on. For now, we're going to talk about the Boston Celtics. They are here also, not being boring. They're actually being kind of fun. So we'll talk a little bit about that, the guys who are doing well, what we're seeing, our impressions, yada, yada, yada. Later on, we'll talk about this thing that Bobby Portis said about Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant that NBA players knew that was done in February. Well, I'm sure that is going to, or has already pissed a lot of people off. But let's wait till the end. That'll be our grand finale. Let's start here in Vegas. They've played one game, and I think the two biggest standouts in that game were Carson Edwards and Grant Williams. Let's start with Carson because he did all of the scoring. He had 20 points in that first game. I like this kid, Jay. We know that he can shoot, and we know he's willing to take shots. I thought that he was very tenacious on defense, and he was really working hard.
Yeah, that's the book on him, is that even in college, while carrying basically like a James Harden-esque usage rate, he still worked hard, and he's a strong dude. So even though he's just 6 feet, he's got a pretty nice wingspan. He plays his tail off, and like he's not a great defender, but he tries, and he can make some plays defensively. And some within the Celtics, I'm thinking of Grant Williams mostly, believe he can do a lot of switching because he's so strong. I don't know how much of that he'll be able to do, but he did a nice job against ball handlers in game one.
Yeah, well, Grant got a little ahead of himself by saying he could switch onto fours, which I don't think Carson Edwards can switch onto fours. But
depends which four, though. I guess.
I look at
Wilson Chandler's out there, like, yeah, cool.
sure.
Go ahead, guard him.
But like,
to pick on Wilson Chandler, but I just remembered Kyrie Irving getting hit in against Wilson Chandler last year.
Sure. I mean, that's a thing that he could probably do. But he is strong. I will say, like, you see him walking in, I feel like he could be like a Patriots running back or something. Like, he's got that wide build, big, strong legs. Like, I think he could throw some pads on and go out there and do some damage. But he was impressive. Shot 5 of 12 from 3. So he is not afraid to shoot. I mean, first hint of daylight he got, he was putting that thing up. So 12 shots.
Let it fly, young bull.
12 shots in 28 and a half minutes.
But he's also really good at getting shots.
Yes.
And so I thought the most interesting matchup of that game was Zaire Smith and Matisse Thybulle defending Carson Edwards, because obviously they determined that Carson Edwards was the biggest threat, perimeter threat on the Celtics, and they use long dudes against him, and he can kind of create a shot against anyone. And I think that's one of the benefits that he'll have at the NBA level of, after playing at Purdue and having teams guard him with super long dudes all the time and being like the only threat in that offense, when he gets to the NBA and it's not summer league anymore, he won't usually have those types of players guarding him, I would imagine. And sometimes he will, but other times it'll just be like point guards who don't have that type of size and length guarding him. And he'll probably have an easier time getting shots off against those guys. But he's really, really good at whether it's coming off screens or dribbling into shots. Like, he can create a shot and a pretty decent shot pretty well. I think the question for him is, how efficient can he get when he's a lower usage guy? And I think that will kind of determine how many minutes he gets his rookie year.
Yeah, I mean, right now I wouldn't think he'd get many, but I could also see a situation where everybody's having an off night, Celtics aren't scoring at all, and Brad like cracks glass in case of emergency, says, okay, Carson, go out there and see if you can get hot quick, because we need somebody to hit shots.
But that backup role is kind of open, right? Like, Terry Rozier left. They didn't really fill that role with a free agent signing. Obviously, they kept Brad Wanamaker. But there are minutes open for a backup guard.
Sure. And I mean, I would think that Wanamaker, it's Wanamaker's job to lose. But I can also see that they're not married to Wanamaker either. So you're right that there are minutes to be had if he can go out there and win that spot.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I think he's interesting. He's definitely interesting because of the way he can make different types of shots. Just being such a versatile shot maker gives him just a wrinkle that, like I said, interesting. I'm going to use the word interesting again. We'll settle on interesting again.
I mean, I would assume that Romeo Langford would have more of an inside track at that job before Carson Edwards. But Edwards is that the exact Brad Stevens type of guy that he loves. I mean, just the hardworking, that work ethic is definitely going to earn him some potential time. And so he definitely has a chance. We're not going to see Romeo Langford this summer. So he kind of falls like out of sight, out of mind a little bit right now. All we see of him is either with that paddle taped to his hand or off to the side, kind of shooting his, you know, working on his shooting form. But again, interesting. The Celtics also, we talked about Grant Williams. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll talk about Grant Williams and the rest of the guys. And then afterwards, we'll talk about Kyrie. Stick around. A lot more coming up here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Grant Williams has been an easy guy to like leading up to his first game. I mean, this dude, he's used the word goofball describing himself and other teammates.
He's big on the term goofball.
He loves it, and it fits. He seems to be a goofball. I think that's a good description. On the court, I feel like his performance fits everything about him to a T. In that he's just very easy to like. I don't know that he is going to have any one particularly great skill, but everything I saw from him in just that one game, and it's only been one game, but it's been very solid. He's calling out where guys are supposed to be. He's quarterbacking the defense. He's making the right plays. He's always looking to box out. All of those little things that are going to make him just a solid player. And that's the exact type of player that's very easy to like.
Yeah, and you could see a little bit how his role will evolve from the way he was in college. Like in college, Grant Williams was a lot of the times a post-up player.
Yeah, back to the basket
and,
guy.
And they ran a lot of offense through him. He's not even 6'7". That'll never be what he is in the NBA. And so I think in game one of Summer League, it's just Summer League, all those caveats apply. But you got to see how the Celtics intend to use Grant Williams.
Yep.
He was spotting up on the perimeter. He hit a couple of threes. He drove closeouts. They kind of used him in like a Shemi Ojeleye type fashion where he was just a kind of a role player, and he's a super strong role player. He's obviously got the strength to handle most dudes on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can move his feet well on the perimeter, he showed good signs of that in game one. That could be his niche. Like, be a guy who can come in and shoot threes sometimes and guard several different positions. I think ultimately defensive versatility will help define what he becomes.
Mm-hmm.
If he can become a guy who can defend any type of guard on the perimeter in addition to having the strength to guard bigger dudes, which I think he's already shown that he can, then that's a huge deal. He's obviously a strong ass dude. Like he bumped like three or four dudes to the ground, just trying to tag people and screen and roll. He was just laying people out.
I think he was a little aggressive in the tagging in the screen and roll. He lowered his shoulder and hit. Hit him like a free safety coming across the middle, hitting a wideout coming across the middle. That was funny. And afterwards, it was like, hey, you leveled some people. He's like, yeah, like whatever. Okay. But he's like, I don't want to like he seems like a guy that could potentially just have a long NBA career doing all of those little things. Like, we don't know what he's going to be. But if you told me today that he was going to like have a 13-year NBA career where he averaged like 12-7, like that would make total sense to me. And he just played and defended and did all the little things and was just kind of like a glue guy. Now, he may not be any better than that. He may not be as good as that. I don't know. But just seeing all of the types of things that he likes to do is impressive. You were right. Like the moving it around the perimeter, switching. There was a clip out there where he switched like from a wing to a point guard to a big and seamlessly. And a lot of these things were successful because of the competition, the level of competition. So obviously we got to see what it's like on the next level. But I was impressed with his basketball IQ. His lateral movement was impressive. And for a guy that wasn't really normally a spot up guy, he spent almost the entire time out on the perimeter waiting to catch and shoot, and then from there doing other things. But maybe the most impressive thing about it was that he just didn't seem uncomfortable. And so many guys in Summer League they don't look comfortable for long stretches. And he didn't have any of that, which I think is impressive for what this is.
I also enjoy that. It seems like every time we talk to him, he says he wants to impact winning at least three or four times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's a phrase he says all the time. And so it cracks me up because that's kind of what Brad Stevens always says. Like, how do you impact winning?
Right.
And that he embraces that. He embodies that. So he's not out there looking for his. He's just out there looking to like set me in screens and drive closeouts and find other guys. And
people are going to
love this.
He's
obviously
kid.
At this stage, at least, like obviously a role player.
Sure.
But he's cool with that.
Yeah. what you get at his slot being drafted at the end of the draft. That's what you can get. That's
yeah. You either get a project normally or a role player.
Right.
And he's a role player, and I think he's very aware of what he needs to do to succeed at the NBA level. Like he's watched a lot of the NBA and he realizes like, okay, I'm going to have to be able to guard smaller guys in the perimeter. I'm going to have to be able to stretch it out to the 3-point arc because I got, put simply, he's not the most physically gifted guy. Mm-hmm. He's not a super long, super tall, super agile big. It's just not what he is. So he's going to have to find other ways to use his strength and his intellect and all that to succeed. And I think he's very aware of that and what he needs to do. And so that's a neat thing about him.
Yeah, it's really cool. But he's like, you can look at him and say he's an NBA player. Like I can see that. And it's just,
or a football player.
Yeah. Right. Right. So there'll be plenty of Grant Williams talk for
a
long time.
He's a broad dude.
Yeah, he's gonna be fun. Let's rapid fire our way through some of the other summer league stuff before we take a break. What did you think of Robert Williams?
I think he shot way too many face up jumpers.
They did not like that.
Yeah, Scott Morrison was not for that. Not about that life.
I actually talked to Robert. It's a story that I'm gonna have coming out on Monday, looking more at his game one, and he said, yeah, it's like, yeah, I broke the play, coach got on my ass. So he knows that but
that's the stuff he cannot be doing,
right? No, right?
like what the Celtics want from Robert Williams is to know his role,
mm-hmm.
and to run and catch lobs and to set screens and to impact shots. And he can't be breaking off plays to launch mid-range jumpers. Like, that's just not him. It may never be him. And it's certainly not him at this stage. So that is not the most encouraging sign.
But it's funny. It's funny. At this point, I mean, you can laugh at it.
It's funny as like an entertaining summer league thing, but if he's doing that in the NBA – in real games, like, that's the quickest way to get his ass sat on the bench.
Right.
Is by doing crap like that. So he needs to become aware of what he does well and why he's on the court. And
but I also can't get mad at him for, like, trying to add things to his game. Like, that's not the worst thing in the world.
I mean, he was like a 40% free throw shooter.
No,
in college.
Like, I get it.
He can't be out there just launching mid-range jumpers. It's just not what he can do. So, yes, I think you can be mad at him.
Okay. But he did catch one hell of a lob. That off the backboard alley-oop was...
That was cool.
That was fun.
That was cool. And he also had, like, a super slick move on the fast break after he tracked down a loose ball. So,
and he made some really
some
great
good
passes.
Things. He did some bad things. He needs to be more willing to fit the role that he needs to play, which is like play hard, set screens, roll, dribble handoff,
for
all
sure.
that.
Tremont Waters, another guy that we're looking at, our final pick in the was 51st overall pick.
His game is so fun.
He is. He's really fun. Now he didn't shoot well, but he still did some impressive things, including throwing that alley-oop off the backboard, which he totally meant to do. But he also had like some great like little steals, and the, you know, he knows how to use his body. He knows how to do certain things. I don't know where he's going to end up. I mean, I don't think that, like, I thought he was going to be a two-way player. He's going to get a two-way contract, and nothing that I saw so far has gotten me to has changed my mind. So, but
well, the Celtics have 15 players if you include Carson Edwards, who was drafted before him.
Right.
So chances are two-way contract. Yes. To succeed at the NBA level, like, there aren't a lot of 5'8", 5'9", whatever he is, dudes in the NBA. He's going to need to be a defensive pest, which he was in game one, but he's going to need to be a real defensive pest. He's going to probably need to learn how to shoot. If I were him, I would watch a lot of Shane Larkin tape.
Yeah.
From Larkin's year with the Celtics, and just see how he impacted everything. How he ran offense, like picked guys up full. He's not like Shane Larkin has a 44-inch vertical or whatever. Like, he's a freak athlete.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Waters has all of that, but he can succeed in similar ways. And from a standpoint of like running offense and having creativity and making reads, like he's really, really interesting. But again, like at 5'9", 5'10", whatever he is, like you need to be play a certain type of way. And so I think he should watch guys like that, tape on guys like that, and kind of figure out a way to latch on in the NBA.
Next, Taco Fall. Everybody loves Taco, man.
Everybody does love Taco.
As soon as he checked in, like as soon as he stood up, the crowd went nuts. And every time he touched the ball, crowd went nuts. To the point where Scott Morrison addressed it in the media session today. He's like, yeah, people want touches for Taco. He's an interesting guy. I don't know what his NBA future is, but it was fun to see. It was fun to see him catch dunks and like land with the rim still in his hand. Like that's just all I want to see from him.
Yeah, he's another dude who's like an intriguing talent because he's not just tall. Like he does have some nice post moves. He's got decent touch around the rim. Like he's more mobile probably than the average 7'6" dude. I guess there is no average 7'6" dude.
Right.
But I don't know that he's an NBA talent, but he does some really interesting things at his size that will certainly keep him on the radar for a while.
I think the best way best compliment I can pay him is that I think he's going to get paid to play basketball.
He'll certainly get paid to play basketball.
Yeah, but I don't know where. Like, I don't think it's going to be the NBA.
He's already being paid to play basketball.
Well, but you know what I mean. Like, not just for 2 weeks in July. But I think at some point he'll find a home somewhere, be it in the G League or somewhere overseas. I think he could go play and make a little bit of money somewhere. But I don't think it'll be with the Boston Celtics. Also, somebody who may not be making money with the Boston Celtics for much longer, Gershon Yabusele, who had just a brutal game. Like, I don't know what led to that. I don't know if he felt like he could dominate and came in with the wrong attitude or something. I haven't seen him play. Like, I've seen him play decent basketball. That was none of it. Like, 99% of what he did in that first game was bad.
It wasn't great. The first touch he had, he tried to dunk on someone and got rejected. And then he tried to make a post move and missed and complained about not getting a foul. And then there were some turnovers involved. And he gave up an offensive rebound at the rim. It just wasn't a good Yabu game.
No, it was not. He did end up, he didn't score. He was a minus 12 in a game that the Celtics won by 14. That's bad. So I don't know. He needs to come out in this next game on where they play Monday and kind of demonstrate that he's a guy who's been in the NBA for a couple years. Like there's no other way to say it. Like he needs to do something and show something. Otherwise, like I don't know what they're gonna do. Like I feel like the $3 million that they have that they're paying him at this point is just a contract that can be used to aggregate in a trade. And if the Celtics don't have any trades on the horizon and they need that roster spot, I mean, what's the sense in keeping this guy around at this point? I don't know. I admit I'm overreacting probably to that one bad summer league game, but like he's not in a position to have bad summer league games. So it's very disappointing to see him play that poorly.
So I think the way the Celtics filled out their front court this summer did not necessarily suggest they are super optimistic about either Gershon Yabusele or Robert Williams. Like, if you thought one of those guys was ready for minutes, you probably don't go out and get three centers in Enes Kanter, Daniel Tice, and Vincent Poirier. And I know Poirier probably won't play much. I know Tice has always been a backup. I know the Celtics needed to replace Al Horford. But if you thought one of those guys was ready for big minutes, you wouldn't have made center such a priority.
Sure.
And it was an obvious priority for them. They got a bunch of other guys. I'm not sure that bodes well for how they feel about Robert Williams or Gershon Yabusele right now.
Well, I'm gonna agree with you on Yabu. I think for Robert Williams, I'm gonna look at this season for Robert Williams as almost like a second rookie season, because last year the plan was to get him to Maine and have him play a lot in Maine because he needed the reps. But with Horford hurt and with Baines hurt, they needed Williams as a just-in-case kind of guy. And he had a lot of time sitting there on the end of the bench not getting game reps. So I think that hurt him. And maybe he's not going to be like – people called him like a Clint Capella type. I don't know if he's ever going to reach that. But I don't know what he's going to be, because we really didn't see a ton last year. Like, we saw the highlight blocks and the lobs and all of that stuff. Like, those were fun. Those were cool. But he didn't get the reps that he needed. So I'm going to look at this season and expect him to spend a lot of time in Maine as if he was a rookie and trying to work on some of those things. Now, he's got the advantage of being here for a year and understanding the terminology and knowing what's expected of him, but that would be my expectation. And then from there, you reevaluate what we think he's going to be and what kind of progress he's going to make.
Do you think that Robert Williams should get playing time with the Celtics regardless of what he's ready for this year?
No,
the center position, it is wide open. Like,
it is wide open.
A lot of minutes available and nobody particularly great taking those minutes.
Sure. Yeah. No, but see, here's the thing. Like, I think, first of all, I don't think the Celtics are that deep into a rebuild where you do something like that. You know, like, if they were the Bulls, then I would say, yeah, you know, just play them and see what we can figure out. So in this case, with this Celtics team, I would rather see him, if he gets the minutes, he needs to earn those minutes. So I'd rather see him get the minutes in Maine. The other thing is, my approach to this season is, it's all about figuring out what Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are going to be. Like, I'm sure I'll care during the regular season, but I don't care at the moment what the end result is going to be. I want to figure out, and I think the Celtics should want to figure out, is Jason Tatum really going to be like an all NBA level type of player? What kind of leap can he make? What kind of leap can Jaylen Brown make? Obviously, because you have to pay him, but you need to know what these two young guys are. Are they going to be the types of future stars that are going to, that you can build around, you know, and then you can figure out what, if it's those two and Kemba, if that's going to be your sort of quote unquote big three, or if you need to somehow adjust the plan. So I don't think having Robert Williams out there kind of screwing up is going to help. And I'm not sure that having Enes Kanter out there is going to help much either, but at least offensively, Kanter is an NBA level offensive player. So I would rather have Robert Williams just take this year to figure it out.
It's interesting that Celtics went with Kanter too, because I think Brad Stevens, like, his track record, his teams have almost always had really good to great defenses. And obviously they've had a lot of defensive talent over the years. But he's always been a great defensive coach. Offense has been more of an issue. And so you wonder if that had any bearing on the Kanter signing and going after guys who can draw free throws and going after Kanter, who averages like 6 offensive rebounds
right.
per 36 minutes or whatever it is. Like, just an outrageous total. One of the best offensive rebounds in the league. Someone who keeps possessions alive. So I do wonder how much of an impact that had, that the belief that Brad can kind of coax at least a good defense out of any type of no matter what the front court looks like, whether it's like Jared Sullinger or Tyler Zeller or Al Horford and Aaron Baines, they've always had pretty good or better defenses. So I just wonder. I haven't talked to anyone in the organization about that, but it's just something that while we were podcasting, I thought about.
Sure. Well, it's going to be one hell of a challenge for Brad, because like, you can only test the limits of that to a certain degree, and Cantor will certainly do that. Why don't we take a break? When we come back, we will talk about Bobby Portis ratting out Brooklyn and Kyrie and Kevin Durant. We'll see. We're coming right back. Locked On Celtics. Sunday in The Athletic, a fine publication that only employs the best of the best, with one notable exception. Anyway, The Athletic published a piece on Bobby Portis, who said in the body of the piece that he didn't have to wait for Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant to make their decision, because he knew where they were going back in February, which is kind of a holy shit thing to say, because that takes tampering to a different level if he's correct, if he's telling the truth, if he's not exaggerating, which he had seemingly a chance to take it back, and he doubled down saying, I'm not going to reveal my sources, but yeah, we all knew. Players in the NBA knew, the media didn't. So that's just wild. And all that does is everybody who hated Kyrie all along now looks at the recording of him and KD talking and saying, see, that was them planning it. They take that stretch where he wasn't even sitting on the bench with the team. They, everything there, the performance against Milwaukee, the oddly blasé reaction to him sucking against Milwaukee, being like, that's okay, I'll just get it next time, that's all right. Like, all of it now seems to add up to say, well, of course he acted that way because he knew he was gone.
Yeah. It's not a great look for Kyrie. And what's funny about it is when this came out today, and I've written about it too, that you first started hearing the whispers about Kyrie and KD maybe going to Brooklyn. Like, I first heard it in March. And then you don't know who to trust when you hear stuff like that. Obviously they ended up doing it and teaming up in Brooklyn. So you wonder exactly when they decided on it for certain. Bobby Portis believes it was at least as far back as February. And it's just a bad look. The funny thing is, like, when that came out today, I don't think any Celtics fans cared. It was just, they've all turned the page on Kyrie. They were ready to get away from Kyrie. And even though the team isn't as talented this year, I think people are pretty excited to kind of move on from the short-lived Kyrie era and move forward to the Kemba era and the Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown era, and just kind of see what comes next, even though the team might not be as good.
And I get that from a fan perspective. People, like, there's certainly going to be a segment of fandom that takes that story and shares it on their social media and says, see, I told you. And there are going to be, I'm sure, Monday's talk shows are going to be all about bashing Kyrie. But this, the whole tampering thing bugs me a little bit, but I get it. I've heard it described as tampering versus interference. So when a basketball season ends and you've got a free agent or a guy that you know is going to opt out, it's pretty much assumed that teams will find a way to talk to these players, talk to their agents, because agents are going to be at these workouts and whatever, and they'll have conversations. But your season is over and whatever. Like, you kind of look the other way because everybody's doing it. That's the tampering thing. The interference, when a guy is playing basketball for your team, that is where the line gets crossed. And maybe Kyrie was going to leave anyway. But this is the same Kyrie that said he was going to re-sign at the beginning of the year. This is the same Kyrie that made that stupid commercial about retiring his number. Like, at some point in the middle of the year, things changed. And a lot of people were, that's one of the questions. Like, how can a guy who, at the beginning of the season, stood there and made that declaration, then halfway through, he suddenly changed his tune? And, oh, by the way, halfway through the season, this came out. At what point did the whole Brooklyn thing come into play? At what point did the Brooklyn Nets reach out to Kyrie's people and say, hey, by the way, we're going to have this cap space and we want to give it to him?
Well, here's the thing about being a star that big and having a friend like Kevin Durant. You don't even need to talk to a team to figure out if they'd want you. They just would.
Of course. But
so it's like, it may not have even been them even talking to the team. They may have been like, okay, this team's going to have cap space. We see them have cap space. They, like, it doesn't have to be a whole tampering thing sometimes. It can sometimes, I think, just be players looking ahead and looking at the landscape of things and deciding, like, yeah, it'd be cool to play with a couple of my friends, DeAndre and Kyrie and KD over in Brooklyn.
But at the same time, and okay, Kevin Durant makes it different, and I'm sure Brooklyn says, well, if Kevin Durant wants to come play, we'll just, whoever he wants to bring with him is fine with me. So then you bring Kyrie over, and there's this unfortunate circumstance from their perspective that Kevin Durant now is hurt, and now you have to have a year of Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan without Kevin Durant, which, by the way, I think is going to be super interesting there, because 1 year with Kyrie and DJ on that team with Brooklyn, with all of the other players that they've had, with Jared Allen having kind of this breakout season, and all of a sudden now is kind of like, am I going to the bench now or what? Like, I'm just kind of curious how that dynamic's going to play out. So I'm not 100% sold that everything's going to go smoothly in Brooklyn, but at the same time, tampering, no tampering, like having that element there, like at some point Brooklyn has to be on board. I don't know. It just seems unseemly. But even if they're not, let's just take that out of it. This is just a horrible look for Kyrie Irving. Just a horrible look.
Yeah, but he's had enough horrible looks that nobody cares anymore. It's funny. It really is. Like if that had just been his lone horrible look, I think there would have been a lot of backlash.
Mm.
But people are just, like, their opinions formed against him a long time ago. And now it's like, yeah, of course Kyrie was thinking about leaving. Like, he was moody. He obviously didn't have a ton of fun this season. Like, I don't think it's a surprise that during the middle of this combustible season, he began to think about playing elsewhere.
Well, I guess we've spent enough energy on this. It's maddening. And I'm sure it's maddening for Danny Ainge, because it torpedoed his plan. It torpedoed the whole thing. And now he's doing something completely different. Before we go, a little bit of breaking news, I guess. I just happened to see on Twitter that the final year of Kemba Walker's contract with the Celtics is a player option. Which is interesting, I guess.
Do you care? That's kind of how these things have gone lately, I feel like.
There's a lot of player options out there. Like,
yeah.
That's wild. Okay. That's it. I got nothing else. We'll just leave it at that and say thank you all for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're here in Vegas. We will continue to podcast from this lovely city. Maybe at some point, I don't know, after the game or whatever, we'll figure it out. We'll get you another podcast. We'll be here all week. All of you who are just listening for the first time, go ahead and give us a subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are everywhere. Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple, Himalaya. Go ahead and give us that subscription. Also give us that 5-star rating, a good review. Really helps us out. And share the podcast. Tell your friends they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.